Speaking of things going on, Walt, what do we, the station, have going on soon?
Yeah, we have a big record sale, record and CD sale, coming up this weekend. It's going to be here at the radio station, 121 Wyatt Drive. We're the little connector between Main Street and El Paseo. You turn off where the Der Wiener Schnitzel is. And that is going to be Saturday from 10 to 4 o'clock and Sunday from 11 to 3 o'clock. Over the last year, we had two big donations of records, and we gave all of our hosts, our DJs, a chance to go through all of them and pick out the ones they want to keep for their shows. And that still left us with boxes and boxes and boxes of really good records that are in good condition. And frankly, we're getting to be a little bit too many of them. And so we have been trying to sell them. And over the last week, I should say this is all a part of our big December fundraiser that is taking place throughout the month. We have earned two generous donations. One is a $2,000 grant from the Devastalli Foundation, and the other is $6,000 in matching funds from the local news fund, which people might recall. They've been on our show several times, Diana Sular, talking about their reporting here in southern New Mexico. And so in order to take full advantage of that $6,000, we have to collect our own $6,000 in donations. And so we are going to be working very hard all throughout the month of December. And as part of that, we were out on Main Street last Friday for the Friday Arts thing, Friday Arts Flea Market, I think is what they call it, First Friday. And we had both CDs and vinyl out there, and I was really surprised. There were 10 people looking at the vinyl for every one person looking at the CDs. I mean, I didn't know that shift has taken place, but it has. And so and we did the same thing on that was Friday. Saturday we had a live broadcast, Local Vibes Live, along with Catalog and the Smear Campaign. We're out at the Valley Music Festival, and we had albums out there, and people were coming by all night long to look through the albums. And there's just a resurgence in vinyl, and so
yes,
we're going to try to take advantage of that. And like I said, that is just one of a lot of things that we're going to be doing as part of our fundraiser, and we just encourage people. You know, if you've been listening to us over the years, please understand that we are all volunteer, that we have a few underwriters, but we're not like a commercial radio station where that's how they pay salaries and that's how they pay the bills and stay on the air. We love our underwriters, but it's not nearly the same kind of thing as when you have paid commercial advertisers. And so we really do rely on our listeners to stay on the air. And this is the one time a year. Well, I shouldn't say that. As I've learned, this is a constant fundraising, but this is the main time of the year, December. Because of this opportunity from the Local News Fund to get matching funds, this is really when we're making our big push. And part of that is we need a new audio board, and so that will be a big part of it. And beyond that, we just need a financial cushion so that if something unexpected happens, we can get through it. And so that's where we're at.
Let me add three things to that. One is, aside from the wonderful music that a lot of local show hosts are putting together here and getting more local performers, we are a way Las Cruces talks to itself. That's my favorite phrase for it. And it just gets more important as newspapers decrease their size and ultimately disappear, and as commercial radio stations want to tell you about what's going on in the nation or the world, but they don't want to have a meaningful discussion of what's going on here where you could actually do something about what's going on.
Right.
So we try to cover local events, local news, not solely that, but we certainly, our shows focus on that as much as we can and try to get local discussion going and try to have candidates for office visit with us when there's an election on. So I was going to add that. I was going to add, re-mention our website, lccommunityradio.org. And go there. You can check our schedule. You can listen to shows after, like starting tonight or tomorrow, this show will be on the archives. You can propose a show, make a suggestion, criticize something we've done, or make a donation, which obviously we invite folks to do, as well as all the other things, or volunteer and not be on the air. The one other thing I was going to add for folks who are coming to the record sale, I always tell folks, particularly people who might be interested in music, that we're almost directly across the street from Hubbard's Music. We're probably, you know, a few inches east of being directly across the street. But if you've been to Hubbard's, you know where we are.
That's right.
Having said that, a lot to talk about. Elections in Georgia, boat strikes in Venezuela, frivolous lawsuits around the world.
Yeah, well, right. Project
Jupiter.
I know we're going to talk about it with Juan. But to me, as I said last week, the boat strikes have broken through, whereas it seems like nothing else has up until this point, at least with Republicans in Congress. Some Republicans. Now, it's interesting. I mean, you've got Tom Cotton, who is giving a completely different version of what is on that tape than pretty much everybody else who is in that room. Democrats describe it as one of the most disturbing things they've ever seen. He describes it as two guys furiously trying to flip the boat back over so that they can continue on their way. Both of those things can't be true. The side who wants the video to be shown is not Tom Cotton's side.
No. I mean, it's pretty clear there were two guys still hanging on to the boat, which was partly submerged and turned over. You know, unless it was a small lightning sailboat, 14 foot or something, I don't know how two guys are turning it over.
Right. You know, of course.
If it's upside down in the air.
And it's on fire.
If it's upside down, on fire, and sinking, they're not trying to turn it over and get it to the United States, which is thousands of miles beyond its range.
Right.
They're trying to survive somehow, and they get shot out of the water.
Here's the thing I think that tells you everything you need to know about Donald Trump. At the same time that we are blowing up these boats, let's be clear, these aren't kingpins. These are fishermen who are trying to feed their family. They get recruited by the drug cartels. They'll have an opportunity to make more money doing this than in a year of fishing. So that's who we're blowing up at the exact same time that he is pardoning a legitimate kingpin. The former president of Honduras who bragged about shoving cocaine up the nose of
Hernandez.
Gringos, who made millions and millions of dollars in personal profit. Which of those two does Donald Trump sympathize with? He sympathizes with the strong man, the millionaire, the guy who got over. Who does he have no sympathy at all for? The little guy. The guy trying to feed his family. That is all you need to know about Donald Trump.
And it's worth noting a couple things. First of all, the excuse for this is that these people have some connection with drugs.
Oh, they do. Probably.
Well, the two who survived one of the shootings apparently don't.
There's a reason for that. I hadn't thought about this. But yes, it doesn't mean they're innocent, but it means if they get arrested and brought here that they have all the protections of our judicial system, which means they have a lawyer who gets to ask questions that they don't want to have asked.
Right.
And so it's a lot cleaner and easier just to send them back.
Well, I don't think they have any evidence that there were drugs on the boat.
Oh, that's not my take. That's not my take. I don't think fishing boats are, first of all, going 200 miles across the water. You get what I'm saying. There's a difference between a drug smuggling boat and a fishing boat. They don't operate the same way. And I think the intelligence is probably pretty good. I think it's much, much, much more likely that they did not want these people having all the legal protections afforded to them by our judicial system.
Well, they don't want them telling their story.
Of course.
If they're just fishermen.
Of course. Even if they're just fishermen who were recruited to do this, which is what I think happens. Yes, I don't think they were born drug smugglers, but I think they were recruited.
Whatever they are, there's no legal justification for killing them.
Right.
It's either a war crime.
Right.
which technically it shouldn't be because we're not at war, or it's what you call murder, homicide. And these are people who are not, even if you assume they're guilty, they're not committing a crime that carries the death penalty.
Correct.
Some people think it should, fine, but you know, yeah. It doesn't. Anyway, we'll save it and talk with Juan about it in more detail.
Yeah.
I mentioned in my column some of Mr. Trump's frivolous litigation lately, and the three-judge panel has just, including two Republican judges, one appointed by Trump,
right.
But unanimously, they held that his lawsuit against Hillary Clinton was not only no good, it was frivolous, and that he and Abba, his lawyer,
right.
would have to pay $1 million to Hillary Clinton. That's, I mentioned in my column, I practiced law for a lot of years, and I very occasionally got a judge to hold that the other side was making a frivolous argument and should pay us something.
Yeah.
Very rarely, and I can tell you no judge ever said my arguments were frivolous, but I was, not shy about making aggressive arguments. And that tells you how far off the mark these are. Meanwhile, another three-judge panel with two Trump appointees throughout his lawsuit against CNN
right.
for referring to his election thing as the big lie.
Which makes ABC look like even a bigger idiot for settling that for however millions of dollars they did.
Yes. Good point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fair comment to say that. Whether you agree or disagree, it's fair and it's a lot closer to truth than some things he says. But
I have a theory on this, and I know this is going to sound like 3D chess, and I'm not suggesting he consciously is, but my belief is he's getting what he wants. What he wants is to demonstrate that it's all rigged. Whoever's in power just pulls the strings and everybody dances to their tune. And everything that was against me when Biden was in power, that was all rigged. All those charges are rigged. I'm proving that the system can't be trusted. Because look at all this. Look at how untrustworthy it is now. So why would you think it was any different when they were coming against me?
You mean he's demonstrating it by his conduct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he thinks of it that way.
No, I don't either. I don't either. I'm not suggesting that he... But I think that subconsciously, whether he's thinking about it or not, that's what he's gaining from it, is he is making a mockery of a system that he has said all along is a mockery.
Want to note a couple of bits of election news that seem to support the idea that what's going on is that a country that elected Mr. Trump is not too happy with what they've done.
He's now the 30% in the poll ranking.
He's down to 36% favorable or 30-something. Not too many people are in his camp, particularly about tariffs and shooting boats in Venezuela. But there were a couple of elections a week or two ago where Republican seats turned Democratic. Yesterday, Tuesday election, Georgia had a House seat where Republican had held it for maybe forever, I don't know, but certainly had held it. Trump carried this district by 12 percentage points a year ago.
Probably not forever. Dixie flipped, what, in the 70s, 60s?
Yeah, right. It was the late 60s. Was Nixon's Southern strategy Democratic South.
That's right.
Because Republicans, of course, had fought the Civil War, had governed the country during the Civil War.
Right. And then everything flipped.
And cared a little bit about Reconstruction. At any rate, there was an election for House District in Georgia. Don't know how much the Democrat won by, but he won after Republicans had been winning, and Trump won the district a year ago by 12%. And the mayor of Miami, who's been Republican for a while, now there's a Democrat.
Yeah, that's the one that's interesting to me. And it's the one that, beyond all the other obvious stuff, has one clear reason why. I mean, Trump just included Cuba among the S-hole countries who are no longer able to come in and stay here and have to go through three times the red tape and all that.
Doesn't go over too well in Miami.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, for the last 40, 50 years, the Hispanic voters in this United States have been split between those predominantly from Mexico who have tended to favor the Democrats, and Cubans who have, because of their anti-Castro and anti-communist stance, have always been very staunch Republicans. And he's doing the best he can to drive the Cubans away.
Let's turn back to local matters, of which one is Project Jupiter. Any thoughts on that?
Well, nothing new. I mean, what is new on Project Jupiter?
Well, this ACOMA, which is a shell created by Borderplex Industries, has made an application for to the environmental department that's a little duplicitous because it's a huge gas-fired generating plant,
right?
But because that size would trigger some, I think, federal regulations, but certainly some heightened scrutiny, federal or state. They split it in two. There's like maybe 100 yards between the two parts and made two different applications.
Yeah, well, that's...
But
that's,
amount of energy is, and not that we didn't, it seems to be equal to or double what El Paso Electric puts out in New Mexico total.
That what they were saying from the beginning? Well, yeah. We should say that the state has already... waived its regulations. Yep. And so now they're trying to figure out a way to get around the feds.
Well, it's waived some of them, but
yeah.
This application was to the Environment Department, and I don't know how much they can actually do about it. What I know they waived was the, I'm trying to think of the name of the law, but the one that says we're going to sunset renewables by 2020. Or 2042, they get an exception from that, and in part that applies to folks who sell their energy, and these folks are generating it for their own use and not a utility company.
I'm sure the people breathing the air around the power plant are going to appreciate that difference.
And I think, we say yes, they said that forever, but unless I stood in the county commission chambers and talked to the guy from who's the head of Borderplex, the guy from Austin, and I asked him about renewable, and he said, we're going to use a lot of solar, we're already talking to people who are going to provide it and working on contracts. Excuse me, they're not doing that. He said a month or two ago, we're going to do that.
Well,
he didn't say 100% or anything, but
so they're not doing
amount.
It all. I was going to say, to me, it would seem probable that you could do both. You would need both.
Yep. Not seeing anything that says they're doing it. It's worth checking. Maybe I'm wrong.
Even if they are, it doesn't mitigate the damage that's going to be caused by the power plant.
It's just incredible. I mean, if it were any other subject than the environment, if we were feeding kids, or something, and we said, we're going to I'm trying to think of a good analogy. I thought about them when I was at home and didn't put them in a column. But basically anything else, if we said, there's poison in the water and we're going to get rid of it. And then you came and said, we got some people with a lot of money, and they want to put more poison in the water, so we're not going to get rid of it for another 20 years.
Right.
People are drinking it. Well, people are breathing that air, and the climate change is doing what it's doing to the world.
Which, to be fair, that is the argument of the commissioners, is that, yes, we're contributing to climate change, but it's not, I forget the word, but contributing to the pollution, the pollutants.
Well, it's certainly.
And this is where I need a scientist, because I'm right. Kind of ignorant in this stuff. But
yeah, I'm no better.
Yeah.
But it's certainly all I can see is that our county office has been derelict in their duty in not insisting on a few things, one of which is a significant use of solar or other renewable. I don't know if they can get any from under the ground.
What is clear to me is that by the time the public knew about this, the decision had already been made. And nothing anybody said was going to make a difference. I think, you know, we saw that kind of first person when we had two of the commissioners in to talk to us. And by then, that was the Wednesday before the final vote on Friday. And it was clear that full steam ahead. And
we have a caller's question. That's been passed to me that basically has to do with the agreements that Doñana County entered into here. And I, from my actual experience, I mean, I could probably be a witness in the case. I was not involved in bringing either lawsuit about this, but I agree with the New Mexico Foundation for Open Government and with others that they violated the open meetings law in part by, and they also were violating the inspection of public records law, or trying to, having the commissioners, when they finally got told about this by the staff, were looking at documents that said do not show to anybody else, but they have an obligation under the Inspection of Public Records Act to show those to anybody else who asks.
Yeah.
And, hello? But
no, the lack of transparency on this from the very get-go has just been appalling. And when the next election comes up, that should be the very first question for any county commissioner running for re-election.
Well, remember that when we're interviewing them, in case I'm not here.
And everybody else should, too.
A part of that is what they then did, because they passed this thing, and people can disagree about whether this is allowed or proper. Jeff Steinborn said he was shocked. Some people at the county say, oh, it's normal.
Representative Cadena was...
Cadena didn't think so.
And well, she had all kinds of questions about how did they come up with that number for the IRB. And,
they came up... They executed an agreement with blank pages or missing pages or, you know, whatever it might be. And then... And this is, I think, basically, they said, well, okay, we've decided we're going to do all this, and we'll let the chair, Shaljo Hernandez, finish it up for us.
Right.
Well, you can do that if it's a matter of signing it and change. You know, sometimes a contract will say this contract is effective, and then it's a blank because you don't know whether you're going to get permission for something, or the commissioner's going to, when are they going to authorize something, or it's dependent on. So you fill in the date.
Yeah, later, right.
You know, if he's going to sign it or fill in the date, that's fine. But if he's actually talking with these people about substance, which it sure appears to me that he is, that's a pretty flat violation of the open meetings law, and they may have to go back to square one. So in answer to your question, caller, I think whenever the courts finally come to something about this, decide something or review it or have a trial, I think they're going to be found in violation of the open meetings law.
Just to put a bow on it, because of our weak laws, even if they are found in violation, all they have to do is come back, do the exact same thing in an open meeting, and you can remedy the... So it's not like it will nullify the
action. Will not. Might create some legal problems for the industrial bonds.
Well,
it's certainly embarrassing, but it's already embarrassing.
And they are beyond embarrassment, so what do you do at that point?